Warning, the Catholic Man Show contains high levels of manliness. If you think you may be too weak to withstand the manliness represented in the following program, please do yourself a favor and stop listening now. If you choose to continue in spite of this warning, if at any time you feel yourself overcome by the manliness, stop immediately and consult your closest medical professional. And now, for the not-so-fair, faint, or frilly, we present The Catholic Man Show.
Welcome to The Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side. So raise your glass. I'm Adam Minahan, sitting here with David Niles in studio, sans Facebook Live. Because last week was just
rough. The kinks out.
It was just rough. And so we said, you know what? Let's take a step back. Let's make sure that we got all of this in line before we jump to Facebook Live again.
And we have a guest with us today.
Yes. I'll let you introduce him.
Okay. So the fine gentleman.
Because there's like something, some symmetry between you
there
two.
There is. It's like we're part of the same person.
That's weird. Almost. Go ahead. You can introduce him.
The good-looking gentleman to our right is named David Williams. David, I came across you because some random person that I don't know sent me a Facebook message and said, I should look into this saint card business and spread the word about it. And yeah. So I did look into it, and it was like, this is awesome. So we ended up talking. Then you came to Broken Arrow. We had breakfast. We bonded.
Eggs Benedict.
Yes, Eggs Benedict. So you're Eggs David Benedict. Williams.
Yeah. I am David Williams. Yeah.
You used to live here in Tulsa. Tell us a little bit about, tell us about yourself.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me, guys. And, you know, so lived in, born and raised in Colorado, then went to Tulsa to go to college. That's where I met my wife. She was actually the very first woman I ever met on campus there at Oral Roberts University. So worked out great. And then we lived in Tulsa for about 7 years, Dallas for a year. And then now we're up here in St. Louis. We've been up here for almost 9 years, so a little bit of moving around, but you know, they say when you marry a girl from the Midwest, you're pretty much in the Midwest for the rest of your life.
You're
so
stuck.
That's exactly
St. Louis. You're at St. Yeah. Louis.
St. Louis. That's right. Yeah. Meet me in St. Louis.
There's some good barbecue in St. Louis, so I have some. Like my heart is I have a little part of my heart in any city that respects barbecue for what it is.
You know what I associate St. Louis with is Italian food, and I don't know why.
Oh
I
yeah.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of really good eats here. Some categories that we'll fight over depending on if you're talking to somebody from Memphis or Kansas City or Dallas, the barbecue war can definitely ensue between Oklahoma City and Dallas and Kansas City and all that good stuff. But yeah, Italian food, toasted ravioli is big up here. And so they bred the ravioli and yeah, it's good. We got square pizza, Emo's pizza, St. Louis style, and Ted Drew's ice cream. So lots of good stuff up here, for sure.
Awesome.
Anytime that you can figure out a way to fry carbs, it's a win.
Yeah. It's carb on carb.
Yeah.
Cover it in ranch.
Yeah. Get a little marinara.
So, David, I don't know if you are familiar or not, but the first thing we do in the segment, which I'm dying of thirst right now, so I'm jumping into it. I'm diving head first. But the first thing we do on the Catholic Man Show is we open, review, and enjoy a man beverage. And today, I think you – was it your idea or was it Dave? I'm going to give you the credit, even if it was Dave's idea. I'm giving David the credit. For the Moscow Mule. The Moscow Mule is what we're having today.
The Moscow Mule is what we're attempting at today.
Yeah, yes. Because...
Sometimes you try your best and you just come up a little short. And...
Really?
Yeah.
I've never... I can't relate.
Don't even get me started. Okay, so a Moscow Mule. David, I looked up the recipe. Do you have...
Because I know the recipe. I know what the official recipe is. He's given me a bogus recipe
I looked up. Anyway, David, I would like you to give us what you believe to be the best Moscow Mule recipe.
Yes, absolutely. Well, okay. So first thing, I've got a couple things that I do. So you got to have the copper mug, but it here's the thing: it cannot be real copper. All right. So the inside of it needs to be like tin or made of nickel or something like that. So this is, I don't know if you can see on the inside here, but it's got that silver lining. The reason for it is if it was pure copper, the acidity of this drink is at a 6 pH, and so it actually will pull the copper out, and that's not good for the body, right? Okay. So you got to have like a, yeah. But the copper mug is like, it's like one of those drinks where you go and order it, and you get a special something to put the drink in whenever you go out to the restaurant, and harkens back to the 1940s. This is like a World War II drink here in America. It's disputed whether or not it started in New York or Los Angeles, but we got a good 75, 80 years on this drink. It's been around for a little while. Some of the legends are that there was a guy that was trying to clean out his vodka and his ginger beer because it wasn't selling. So he decided to make it, and it kind of took off. So, yeah.
Okay, so here's what I've heard. This is, I did just a little bit of research ahead of time. And here's the story that I read. Was that in the 1940s on Sunset Strip in California, there was a guy named I'm sorry. Let's cheers first, and then we can. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Cheers
so
to
I
Jesus.
I really estimated my part per part here.
Good.
I don't know if it's supposed to.
Sorry,
be
I should have told you that. Should have told you the recipe. Sorry about that.
Sorry.
I got off track.
We'll see. Back to your story. Just one second.
Okay.
I do want to get the recipe out.
Yeah,
so you got to, all that to say, you've got to freeze the copper mug first. That's my key anyway. Throw it in the freezer for about an hour. When you pull it out, throw about an inch of ice in the bottom of it. And then what you do is you immediately put the vodka in, about 2 to 3 ounces of vodka, right? So just enough to, you know, make it a drink, right? And then you very carefully pour the ginger beer over it, but not before you insert the lime. And I like to highly recommend a real lime rather than lime juice.
Sure.
What I do is I cut it in half, I squeeze the crud out of both sides directly into the glass, and then drop the lime into the glass before topping it with the ginger beer. That's just my personal
order of operations. Mm-hmm.
It's order of operations. Yeah, it's a Christmas time favorite in the family. That's all I'm doing is making Moscow Mules for everybody at Christmas time. But
cool.
But yeah. And then if the lady would like to share the Moscow Mule with you, coconut infused vodka is another favorite. So just to put a little fruit in there, and so that's not too bad either. So yeah,
I like that.
But that's it. About 12 ounces of ginger beer on top of 2 to 3 ounces of vodka is about the shakedown.
So what we're drinking right now is just ginger beer and vodka. And we thought, should we go ahead? We don't have the lime. That's a pretty crucial.
Or the Moscow Mule.
We don't
Mule
have the right
mugs,
cup. You know. Yes.
Which we like is contradictory. Like a few episodes ago, probably about 4 or 5 episodes ago, we talked about glassware
and having the appropriate
glass for the appropriate drink. So we're just a bunch of hypocrites right now.
It's like
we
this
are.
Goes against everything that we stand for.
Yeah.
But then we realized, you know, let's drink it. In as like a realization, as a theological lesson, that the human condition, things are not as they should be. Okay, so we're drinking sans lime intentionally. We're doing it on purpose because we don't have limes, in order to remind ourselves that the human nature is fallen.
So we're doing this in reparation of all the sins of the listeners.
Right. We were born without a good that should be there, just like this drink was mixed without the good that it deserved.
Yeah. I've got water in it as a sign of mutual respect for what is missing on your side. Mm. And then I will cut and squeeze the lime in and enjoy what is missing in yours so that we can, you know, it's a good balance.
This is the most theological drink we've ever had.
Okay, so I want to get to this story really quick because I thought it was very
please,
good.
Please do.
On the Moscow Mule. So on Sunset Strip, in the 1940s, there's a guy named John who just acquired Smirnoff vodka.
Okay.
And another guy named Jack. I don't remember their last names. I'm sorry. I just couldn't remember their last names. Jack, who owned a bar on Sunset Strip, he had some ginger beer. So Jack and John got together. They put them together and said, hey, this was actually a good drink. We should try to sell this. What they did was they took it to the first bar right next door to him. Or I'm sorry, they took a picture of it drinking in his bar, in Jack's bar. Took a picture of it, like, right, drinking it there. Then they took that picture and went to the next door bar and said, look, this bar over here is selling these Moscow mules, and they're doing really well. If you want to compete, you should start selling this.
Yeah.
And that was their advertising campaign.
He took two pictures. So he took two pictures. He gave one to the bartender that was just at, so he could hang up it in his bar,
right,
and show his
customers.
Okay,
so you've heard this story, right?
I have, yeah, yeah. Okay. And then he'd take the next one to the next bar. Yep.
Yeah, and that was their advertising campaign to create this idea of, like, competition.
It's based on a lie. I mean, I guess not. Not. He was drinking it.
He was drinking it, and it's selling it at his bar, so...
Okay.
I don't know. So,
well,
when we get back, we're going to jump into the man gear. I'm very excited about this.
Me too.
Because it ties in very well with our topic today.
Yeah.
We're here with David Williams of Saint Cards. Spoiler alert. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan in studio. Go on YouTube and check us out. We've got the studios looking better.
Every day.
Adam and I look fair. Fair to medium on the camera. We're joined.
Moderate.
Our guest today.
Very virtuous.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the very middle ground. We look very medium, I think.
Yes.
Our guest today, though, is not practicing virtue. He looks phenomenal on the camera. His name's David Williams. He is a retired education professional. I think that you...
I'm not, yeah. I'm kind of retired, but it's like the first quarter's over and I'm in the second quarter now, you know?
Are you education field at the moment?
I mean,
you've retired. You're like an athlete who's moved on to, like, owning their own business or something. It's not
kind
that you're
of,
retired.
Yeah, I would... Yeah, it's yeah. I mean, it definitely got through a tour of duty. There's no doubt about that. I maybe that's a good way to put it. I don't know, but yeah, I've flown some missions in education. How about that?
You were a principal. 40. What
principal?
Where?
Principal of a Catholic school here in St. Louis, the St. John Paul II Preparatory School, an awesome place. It's a pre-K through 12 program here in the St. Louis area. And was principal there for 3 years, and then dean of students before that, and then a teacher through most of that as well. But it really enjoyed my time over there, and the Lord brought me home. It was just one of those God things where there was an opportunity to you know, work from home and continue to do a lot of the things that I love to do. And you know, for a guy that's got 6 kids and a beautiful wife that stays at home with them, it's a good fit after you lead the crazy life of heading up a school for a couple of years. And so it was a good transition for sure.
No doubt. Okay.
So we've been drinking Moscow Mule. That's the drink today. This man drink today, man beverage today.
Yes.
The man gear today is no other than the Saint Cards that we kind of
talked
about.
David, as I recall, your conversion was actually a key part of Saint Cards. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah, I mean, we you know, going to Oral Roberts University, it's not exactly like the theological
most
track is
the Catholic friendliest
to become Catholic, right?
Yeah.
But no, we were very, I was very fortunate to meet my wife there and a lot of great professors and colleagues. And so, but as a result of that, you know, and several years of studying and talking with a lot of the guys that I was going to theological school with, you know, ended up understanding all the more the fullness of the faith. And, you know, as a good Dr. Shelton over there says, you know, it's not so much that we had to leave anything behind. It's just, you know, it's just like if we were drinking from a water bottle before, it's now we're drinking from an ocean. And so that's where I think St. Card certainly began, right around my conversion, because it's, you know, it's like as a Protestant, you know, St. Augustine, right? And maybe throw around a quote of St. Francis or so or here and there. But then you can become Catholic and you realize they didn't even say Augustine. They call him Augustine. Like, I don't know anything about the saints. Like, I am a neophyte. Like,
I've been lied to is what I've been doing. I've been lied to.
I don't know anybody. I see all these pictures. I've been lied to. I don't know anybody, right? And, you know, I mean, it's true, though. It's like if you go up to, you know, your grandma's attic and you're just messing around up there, and all of a sudden you come across this big, like, you know, chest, you know, and you pull it open and you get a couple of the mothballs out of the way, and you see like these photo albums there, and you open them up and you blow the dust off and you start to look through them and see all these pictures. It's like, I don't know anybody. I don't know any of these people. So you're gonna take that album downstairs and you're gonna be like, Grandma, who's this? Like, right. Who's that? Yeah. And she, you know, and that's right. Exactly what it was like for me. It's like, I have no idea who these people are. The church has got photo albums, you know, of these people, and I have absolutely no idea when they lived, what they did, you know, why they should mean anything to me. And then you come to find out that they're your family, you know. So it's like, it makes sense that you'd want to spend some time with your family, right? So that's kind of how the St. Card's journey began.
It was just you trying to find out more about the saints for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. You know, I ordered a bunch of holy cards, and they came in this big plastic bag, and they were all out of order. And it drives me crazy. You know, it's like I wanted to learn about the saints, but you know, so I started looking it up on online and trying to figure out, you know, who lived when, and you know, who was a martyr, and who was, you know, what's a doctor? I didn't even know what a doctor of the church is. You know, so I started figuring all that stuff out and started putting it into spreadsheets, and then made a couple cards for my family. And then my wife was telling a couple of the gals at church, at her local parish, about them. And she said, that David's got this spreadsheet. He keeps all these facts of the saints on. And then of course, all the folks from church were like, well, hey, can you send us the spreadsheet? And we're like, well, maybe we should put them on a card for, you know, for everybody. So that's kind of how things got started. And that was about 8 years ago. So this has been a big project.
Okay, so I want to
should we display them?
Well, yeah, you can display them. I want to talk about them for a second, cuz okay. I just a couple hours ago experienced them. Opened up the package, the basic package. You have several packages of the Saint Cards.
Yeah.
Saintcards.com is where you can go, but you have like the basic, there's a mega package, I think, tell us the packages real quick.
So there's a base set. So it's actually a game that you can play. You can actually literally sit down at a table and play this game, and then at the same time learn facts about the saints. That's the whole idea behind Saint Cards. So the base set, to answer your question, is 106 saints, and then you can buy expansions that add to the fun, right? So then there's a doctor for sale, and then in the future there'll be a bilocators expansion and a stigmatist expansion and all sorts of fun stuff. So the game is one of those living card games, so to speak, right? And once we get done with about 11,000 saints, then we can stop. How about that?
Fair enough. Okay, so I want to talk about this real quick, because I pulled it out of the nice packaging that you have. You have a nice little canister to keep them all in. You have the rules right here, you know, right with them.
Yep.
It's a pamphlet like this. If you are listening right now, it's what, 1, 2, 3, 4. It's 4 pages total of rules, and then okay. So then you got jewels, and you got base, and you got the cards. So I was looking at this, trying to figure out. Okay, when I opened this up, I was like, okay, there's no way. As a guy, I was like, I don't need the rules. I'll figure this out. And so I started looking at it, and I was like, no, I have no idea what I'm looking at.
I better consult the rules.
So let's run through really fast, and we don't have a whole lot of time, but
maybe just a basic
the basic understanding. Game. I pull the cards out, I pull the instructions out, I pull the jewels out. Yeah. Now what, David?
Yeah, so I'm assuming you all have played Uno, right? You know how to play Uno or they're familiar with the game, right? It works much the same way. So you deal the cards out to everybody. You have the deck, you know, that ends up in the very middle of the table. And then, of course, you want to shuffle them before you do that. And then you turn over the top card. And the first player that goes, their responsibility is to look at the cards in their hand and try to find a card that they have that has the most matches or the most similarities with the card that's turned up. So all the colors and the numbers and the symbols, they all mean something, right? They all tell you whether or not, you know, where the saint lived, what century they lived in, whether or not they were a priest or a martyr, what feast month they celebrated in, right? So what you're doing is you're looking at the upturned card and you're trying to find a card that you have that has the most matches. So let's say you find a card that has three matches, you put it down, you get three treasure, and then it's the next person's turn, right? So you go around, you're trying to get rid of your cards and also end up with the most treasure at the end of the game. So like right there, Pope St. Clement I, feast month is November. The top left shows the century he was born in. Bottom right is the century he passed away in. The keys are the fact that he was born in Western Europe, then he also spent some time in Eastern Europe because he sent the letter to the church in Corinth there. And he's got his patronage information. He was a martyr, all sorts of information there. And you don't really have to get encumbered with what the symbols mean to start off with. You just have to look down and go, okay, that card's gray, my card's gray, so that's worth one treasure. And that's, you know, and that's, you know, that card has a one on it, mine has a one on it, so I get to have a treasure. So the idea is the more that you play, the more familiar you become with the symbols that are on the card. And then once you learn what those symbols mean, like my little 6-year-old can throw me under the table with saint knowledge because he likes to play. Every morning we wake up and we play a game, 15 minutes a day, and you know he's got it down. So it's kind of fun. I mean, you can ask adults or kids who play the game, you know, what century did so and so live in, and they can tell you.
And this isn't just a game. I mean, it's actually based on a way of learning, where you know you interact with something and. We just got a couple minutes left. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So yeah, the loci method is an ancient Greek memorization method, and actually Saint Albert the Great and Saint Thomas Aquinas, they were fairly smart, I would say. I mean, we can say that.
Right? Yeah, above average.
Above average, they were Catholic men, in the truest sense, right? So they utilized this, and of course, this is the age, this is the 13th century, so there's no computers, no Wikipedia, right? So you've got to basically memorize everything you read. You know, paper's hard to come by. There's no big printing press down the road. So the memorization techniques were pretty big back then. And so the loci method basically allows for you to compartmentalize information. And so as long as you've got a map and some sort of area that the information is stored in every single time, you're able to resource that information, right? So my you know, little kid may not know what a doctor of the church is, but you know, and he may not be able to explain what a doctor is, but he knows that blue stands for doctor. So if I ask, you know, was Saint Genevieve a doctor, he can think, well, no, she doesn't have blue on her card, so no. Or was Saint Thomas Aquinas, you know, did he live in the 13th century? They can go, well, he has a 13. Yes. Tell me, I know what a century is, but he is. Yeah, exactly.
So, David, what you're telling me is that very, very soon, my 3-year-old is going to know more about the saints than me.
That's the idea, is that you play with them so that you can learn with them. So you don't have to lose any of them.
Well, that's Saint Cards. Go to Kickstarter.com. Search for Saint Cards, all one word. You'll find them there. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Here with David Williams of Saint Cards. And I am just, like, I sit here and I look at these and I'm like...
Every single picture is absolutely beautiful. Like,
I'm a little upset that I didn't think of this.
I'll bet it took hours just to find, like, for some of these cards, I'll bet it took hours to find this one picture. Because some of these pictures I've never seen of these saints, And it's like, wow.
Well, let's be honest, Dave, you haven't even heard of half
of
these things.
I mean, yeah, that's totally true. But yeah. Like even the ones I have heard of, you see a picture and it looks like, I didn't realize Da Vinci painted this saint, or, and I don't know if it's just like that kind of art.
Yeah.
It's the best art of all the art.
I want you to, you're talking before the break, go to YouTube. You can find our conversations in between segments. Yeah. You were talking about how you wanted to wrap up the St. Cards Away. So we can talk, because I really want to talk about the dignity of fatherhood.
I said it was Kickstarter.com. You can do that. Also, you can just go to stcards.com. I wanted to also throw that out there. There is the Jesus card, which comes in every pack. The point of the game is to win as much treasure as possible so you can lay it at the feet of Jesus. You see, he's really here on both sides. I feel like you could also do really good magic tricks with this deck of cards if you're into that kind of thing.
Which I am.
Which I am. Now you see me. Now you see me. Anyway, I wanted to get that out there just because I kind of fanboy about this game. Anyway, our topic today is the dignity of fathers. The dignity of fatherhood.
Right. Which is a much needed topic right now with everything that's going on in the Catholic Church over the last 3 weeks, but let's just talk about over the last 30 years with fatherhood in general.
Yeah.
With the degradation of fatherhood in the media and the culture and in TV shows. And then you add on to the fatherhood, the spiritual fatherhood of everything that's been happening in the Catholic Church. There's an extreme importance to talk about the beauty and the dignity of fatherhood, which I'm really pumped to talk to David Williams about, because
So one thing you might hear about in the news, not as much lately, but somewhat recently, is that there's a war on women. And whether that's true or not, I think the greater war is the war on fatherhood. You know, and Satan, that would be probably at the top of his agenda to do anything to destroy God the Father. That's going to be the best.
Newsflash, though, like he can't ever do that.
No, he can't.
So it's
because he pretty much is the worst.
He's already lost.
Yeah. So yeah. David, you are a father
of six.
I am.
Six times.
I've got six times, and two little ones up in heaven. So we've got eight.
Oh, eight all
accounted for, and eight all together. Yeah,
I have four.
You know,
I have one in heaven as well. So I'm with you.
That's awesome. I'm sure they're enjoying
each
life
company.
In its fullness. There's no doubt about that.
Yes,
without a doubt.
But yeah, I mean, you know, and along with St. Cards in my first. I remember this in my first year as a Catholic. I remember going to the rectory at the cathedral here in St. Louis, which is a beautiful place if you get a chance to visit. But I went to meet with the rector there, the good Monsignor Pizens, God rest his soul, and I was talking to him about all the things I wanted to do, right? Because I was supposed to be the preacher, right? I was going to go to Oral Roberts University and become the tent preacher and all that good stuff, and kind
of
write that
of the future.
Ride that wave, you bet. That was the idea. That's what I felt led to. I've always had a heart for evangelization and sharing the faith, and so that's what I was talking to him about. Is like, all right, so now that I'm in, like, what can I do? Like, I know I can't become a priest, but like put me to work. Like, what can I do? Let's go. And I remember, I will never forget this, but he chuckled and he kind of leaned forward with his robust frame across his desk and he looked at me and he just said, "Do you know who you are?" And I thought, apparently I don't, you know.
What a weird question.
He took his finger and he says, "You're a husband and a father. That's who you are." And I remember in that moment being so dissatisfied with that answer. Like, it's like, yeah, I know. Like, I already checkbox, you know, bucket list, hashtag did it already, you know. Like, that's kind of how I thought at the time. But he spent the next, you know, good 20, 25 minutes sharing with me how, like, that is it. Like, everything that you need to be doing now has got to center itself around being a good husband, being a good father, but not before being a good son of the Father in heaven, right? And so he kind of gave me that order, and that, boy, what a way to start off my first year as a Catholic, right? And, you know, I'm reminded of you know, what Bishop Olmsted said in his exhortation, right? I mean, of course, you guys you guys have met him in person. I'm a little jealous, right? But in his question three, you know, he says fatherhood changes history, right? I mean, this is, it's essential to the flourishing of the world, right? And there is this, you know, sometimes politically we get into this mode of like, well, you know, men think they're all this and all that. And, you know, and this war on women is really brought on by the men and all that kind of thing. And really there just needs to be a reset of roles here. We just need to, we need to be able to step back and take a look at, okay, what's really going on here? Because without the man, you can't have a woman. And without a woman, you can't have a man. So let's just agree that we both need each other, right? And now we just need to try to figure out, you know, what are the roles here? And so anyway, so I mean, there's more I can say on that, but that's kind of how the whole fatherhood, Catholic fatherhood journey began for me anyway.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, it's almost like I hear what you're saying. When the priest says, you know, you're a father, I can kind of see myself and, you know, maybe probably you at the time saying, yeah, anybody can do that. You know, there are fathers right all over the place. I want to do something special. You know, I want to do something great. And, you know, so many men have forgotten that this is the greatest thing that they will ever do. That, you know, to participate, to bear a child, to create life, to do that which only God can do, that's like crazy. And people don't, I think people forget to just think about it. But you've been given this little tiny baby, and it's up to you. Don't mess it up.
Yeah, I think I totally agree. I also think though that the biggest thing you can do
is love your wife. I know what you're gonna say.
Is love your wife. Like the best thing you can do for your children
is love your
wife.
I said that, I knew exactly what you were thinking.
But it's because we've been best friends for a long time. So, like, that's why. But we talked to Sam Guzman this week at the Catechetical Conference for Tulsa. We had an awesome time. Talked with Sam Guzman and a couple other people. But we talked to Sam Guzman specifically about, you know, the importance of almost scandalizing. Like, there's this idea of almost, it's scandalous to think about like putting your wife before your kids, David. Yeah. It's almost like, you know, when you hear somebody say like, oh no, I got to put my wife before my kids. It's like, what? Your kids need you the most. Like they're most dependent. Why are you putting your wife before your kids? But we have to remember, David, I want to get your take on this, is that obviously your first vocation is to your wife. It's not like your first vocation is to marriage. Your first vocation is actually to your wife.
That's right.
And then to your children. So it's like this hierarchy of, like, our whole church is built on hierarchy. This, like, the domestic church is also built on hierarchy. What are your thoughts there?
That's right. Yeah, no, that's right. And this goes back to Monsignor Penza's hierarchy, right? Is in order to be good fathers, what is our source, right? I mean, how do we get the energy and the guidance that we need? Well, we need to be good sons of our father, right? I mean, that's hierarchy first, right?
Right.
So be a good son. And then we got to go and be a good husband. And you're absolutely right. If the children then take the, you know, I mean, they're the ones that are tapping on our shoulders. They're asking questions over and over again. They're the ones that are running out to you whenever you get home from work, and they're like, Daddy, and it's so cute and everything. But there is that moment where you got to go, yeah, it's awesome, right?
Yeah.
But they need to also know in that moment, like, hey, it's so good to see you. Where is your mama? Right? Mm-hmm. Where is mama? I want to find her, right? I want to give her a kiss. I'm going to give her a hug. You know, I'm sitting on the porch with mama right now, and you all are going to clean the kitchen, right? While I talk, because I haven't talked to her all day, and I
how
miss
old
her,
do right? they have to be before you can?
Yeah,
do that?
When can I establish that role? Well,
so our oldest is almost 13, and then we've got an 11-year-old and a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. Yeah, and so the younger kids are now able to be babysat by a couple of the older ones while the good cleaners are working and all that. So we're getting.
That is going to be awesome.
Hit this spot. Here's the thing. You got a little ways to wait. We hit this spot like a couple years ago. So it's starting to get a little like, hey, delegation is starting to happen, you know. But all that to say, it's that idea of, hey, I love you, but I loved her first, right? And I love her with fullness. I love you with fullness. But, you know, if you weren't here, I would still be, I would be hanging out with your mama, right? And so there's that idea that, you know, daddy loves me, but he loves mama first, right?
So that is, my father-in-law really has a saying that I chose her. You just showed up later.
That's another way.
Yeah, yeah.
That's another way to say it. Yeah, yeah. But I think that the crux of it is, though, you understand, like, well, let's just step back. Let's look at the name. It's the sacrament of holy matrimony. It's not the sacrament of holy patrimony, right? So, I mean, mater, right? The mother. This is the holy motherhood, right, in the church that's taking place. And we are the administrators. We're the head. We are, the leaders. And without us, obviously there wouldn't be a family. But then at the same time, it's not even about us. It's about
them.
It's about
No, I
it's
totally
about her
agree.
Having that seed of promise. Absolutely. Well,
when we get back, we're going to keep going. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan in studio. We are joined by the one and only David Williams,
co-creator
of Six Children Always. And Saint Cards. Go to saintcards.com to find out more. We are drinking a Moscow Mule, one of Mr. Williams' staples, a staple in the Williams house, at least at Christmas time. This much
for
we
the
do
adults.
Know. For the adults.
For the adults, yes.
For the
yes.
adults. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess you couldn't really make a child version. There's no such thing as non-alcoholic vodka, as far as I know. And if there was, no one would want it.
Ginger beer is typically pretty low in alcohol.
Ginger beer is fine. Ginger beer doesn't have any.
This one actually. This one does.
I did not get the low alcohol ginger beer. I went with the 4.8%.
4.8%.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, that's a different take.
So we're drinking Krabby's ginger beer. I got it. I meant to say this earlier. When you're making the Moscow Mule, this much I do know, the right ginger beer is key. I've had some ginger beers that are the worst thing on the planet. I tried one time at a buddy's house. I took a sip, and it was so potent. It, like, ruined my taste buds for the rest of the evening. I don't know. I think it must have been a spiced ginger beer. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just be careful. Be careful, people.
Be careful. Gosling's is fine, or, you know, Stoli, or something you can get at Walmart or something.
Yeah, I think Gosling's is the most popular. That's what the dude at the liquor store told me. But it's like 2% alcohol,
it's also really cheap. Krabby's. I like this one.
This is turning out to be a really delightful ginger beer.
So we're talking about the dignity of fatherhood with David Williams. Okay, where would we like to
go? When you left off, David, you were waxing eloquently on matrimony and how it's not patrimony.
Well, right, yeah, and it's not patrimony, right? And no one likes to be patronized anyway, right? So the idea is that if the woman has that seat of prominence in the home, in other words, the kids know that you have her back no matter what. And there's nothing that they can get you to say that's different from what she says regarding whether or not they can go do something or whatever it may be, right? That support system is there to uphold, right? We're that backbone. As a man, I mean, yeah, we generate life. That's part of our role, but we're also the backbone, right? And sometimes we refer to the woman as a backbone with it, but for the sake of the example, if we can look at us as that cross, it's just there, right? And we're laying down our life for our family as Christ laid down his life for the church and gave himself up for her. That gives her the foundation that she can lean on. And then by having that foundation, the children have a very secure environment. And St. John Paul II, in the same letter, and I just have it right here in front of me. It says that the man provides, he unifies, right? He provides stability. And by means of a witness, he gives the children an adult Christian life, which effectively introduces the children into the living experience of Christ and the church. How can you do that? How can you give your kids a living experience of Christ in the church if you aren't showing them Christ as a man and you aren't then laying down your life for the bride, the church, in the home, right? And so all that to say, it's that holy mothering, that nursery, so to speak, that prepares the children to be then given to the holy patrimony or the holy orders, right? The men, the priests, the bishops, right, who then are then entrusted to sanctify these children, right? So I'm a part of the matrimony club, and then we introduce them to the patrimony club. That's the way I like to look at it.
I think that's such a good way to put it, because that's foundational to what the role of a man is. The role of the man is to protect and defend, you know, to guard the castle so that the woman can, you know, be effective and can be loving and just just fill the house with warmth. I had the opportunity to go to adoration today, so I was, you know, praying about men and
stuff.
What I was just thinking, I was meditating about manly things. And do you think that every man has a vocation to fatherhood in some way or some form?
Yes, absolutely. It's that is our dignity, is to be a father. Absolutely. So how does that play out? Obviously, we call priests fathers, so that's pretty straightforward, right? I mean, they father the flock, right? We father children. I think it's sometimes more difficult for a single dedicated man to understand that. How am I a father? Well, I mean, they're fathers to the fatherless, right? So right now somewhere, I mean, you know, we're on the program right now. I mean, I'm here with my family. I've got to put my kids to bed. I got to make sure that I get some good sleep to wake up in the morning to take care of my family. But there's a single dedicated guy out there that is hanging out with sharing the faith with somebody at a 24-hour diner and can stay up till 2:30 in the morning talking about the faith. They are fathering, right? They're pastoring in almost an invisible way. They're doing the kind of the Navy SEAL work for the kingdom of God, right? Or maybe a brother in a monastery, right? How is he a father? Well, he's a father because the intercessions that he's offering up for the sake of the church, for the sake of the bride, are covering, are protecting, they're guarding the troops on the front lines, right? And so all that to say, I mean, it doesn't matter what vocation you're called to as a man, you're absolutely finding your dignity whenever you, begin your role as a father.
One of the things that I really like about this is we've all read the, I'm talking about the Saint cards. One thing that I like about the Saint cards is that we've all read the stats of like how important it is that the father, if the father's involved, then so much percentage, there's a good chance of
the kids staying Catholic.
Kids staying Catholic, and not only the kids staying Catholic, but having family values, virtue. You know, there's all these things about how there's an importance of the fatherhood being there. One of the things I like about this is that it's a practical, it's a tangible thing of here's how to be here's how to be a father and teach the faith. Mm-hmm. Because we all hear, like, there's not a single guy out here, I wouldn't imagine, that's listening to this podcast right now or radio show right now that is saying, like, yeah, I've heard before I'm supposed to be the spiritual leader of the family. Mm-hmm. I'm supposed to be the spiritual leader. I'm supposed to, like, I'm the physical, I'm the spiritual, I'm the provider. I've heard all that. What does that mean?
Yeah.
How do I tangibly obtain
give me
those goals?
Tangible, right.
Yeah. The Saint cards is a tangible way of obtaining the mm-hmm. fatherhood.
It's at least one good thing that, you know, you can do to be the spiritual leader. Yeah, and I think that's true. I think there's a lot of guys out there who feel that way, because how many men were raised without a father? I mean, the numbers are absolutely staggering.
Right.
And if you grew up without a father in the home, I can see how you might.
It's hard to have a role model.
Yeah. I could see how you'd be very uneasy, unsure about doing all that. You know, you might be afraid,
very uncomfortable,
a lot of fear.
Right.
Right.
But at the same time, you probably realize even more the value of fatherhood, because You know, if you grew up without a father, you know, you're very aware of what you missed.
That's what I love about St. I want to get your take on this, David, but this is what I love about St. Faustina's take on St. Michael the Archangel. She says that St. Michael had no person to look up to stand up for what was good.
To Satan.
Mm-hmm. You know, when Satan was being cast out, he said, you know, who are you to be like God? And he cast Satan down into hell. Well, he had nobody. He did not have a Christ figure. He did not have Moses. He did not have Elijah. He had nobody.
No role model.
No role model whatsoever to appear like, this is the good. And that's what I love about St. Michael the Archangel. That's why that's one of the reasons why we named the radio station that we're running is St. Michael Catholic Radio, is because he had this idea of, I know.
Are you trying to say he's the man?
He's the man.
Ironically,
he is the man.
He's the man.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Do you agree?
I don't know if he's a father. I don't know. I'm not sure. Well, that's an interesting question. I don't know.
If we can dive into St. Michael the Archangel being a fatherly role.
Yeah.
Mr. Williams,
is
there a response?
Well, yeah. I mean, God is a pure spirit, and angels are pure spirit. So, you know, if God, who is over us all, that we call Father, is pure spirit, there could be some tie-ins there. But I think what, you know, Adam's saying is so true that, yeah, you don't have to have a role model in order to know the difference between good and evil, right? But the role model, right, where that helps, and I think this is where a lot of guys are, and I think every man, I mean, my father is still alive. He's fantastic. I'm very blessed to have had the father that I've had for a great many years, and I hope to have him for another 25 years. But whether or not you have your dad all the way through, whether or not he stays married to your mother or not, right, it still doesn't mean anything when it comes up to good and evil. But at the same time, we can't give excuses, right? As some of us know, as an example, someone that didn't have a father, right? Well, then you need to step in and help to do your very best to play that father role. Even though you'll never replace their father, you should step in there. You know, take them to McDonald's. Everybody needs that, and that's where those single dedicated folks can really come in and help. Right? It is, you know, maybe I don't have time to father any more than the six that I have, but they can, right? And so on and so forth. But all that to say is you have this the dignity that we find in fatherhood really does come from a place of understanding that we're really just here to support the bride, right? Whatever it is, the church, the wife, whatever it may be.
I agree. And ultimately, of course, the dignity of fatherhood stems from God the Father in His holiness.
Yep.
David Williams, thank you for being a father and for being a gift and joining us today on the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team.
Absolutely.
The winning side.
So raise your glass and cheers to Jesus.